Stars, who are your company, dance with you. Teach us the mystery of your dance. We may be in harmony with you. Learn to give away and renew. Oh, Moon Mother, your loving gaze falls softly on the sacred mountains. Oh, Moon Mother, your shining gaze falls softly on the sacred ocean.
Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town or across the globe. I want to thank you for joining me tonight and every night. Our ratings have really been going through the roof. We're having a lot more downloads than usual, a lot more listeners. So I appreciate that validation that you are enjoying the show. Well, as you probably know, tonight is Ritual on the Radio. And the plan is, if all goes as planned, but we're in Mercury retrograde, so who knows, if all goes as planned, Flash Silver Moon is going to be calling in soon. She hasn't yet shown up on the switchboard, but she was supposed to give us the Astro Flash for the month. We spoke over email just recently, and she said she was calling in. However, I know she has a Lammas ritual tonight, and she was going to try to squeeze in the Astro Flash at the same time. So I'm wondering if that all went awry. I don't know about you, but usually Mercury retrograde has no effect on me, but I have to tell you, this one was a doozy. It definitely did, and maybe you're experiencing the same thing. If you would like to call in, our number is 718-766-4662. And I want to say hello to Sam, Samantha Sage. She is with me on the line here. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Karen. So good to be with you again.
Well, thank you for helping me do our ritual on the radio tonight. Listeners, for those of you who might be tuning in for the first time, Samantha Sage is one of the Sacred Sunday priestesses, and she helps facilitate once a month at the Green Man when we do our Sacred Sunday service. And she has been kind enough to jump in these last few Ritual on the Radio, Sacred Salons, where we sort of bring our Sacred Sunday to you over the airwaves. And if I don't hear from Flash pretty soon here, we're going to just jump into that. Our theme tonight is pruning your divine tree. And it's very interesting because you know, we're about ready to go into Lammas, and Lammas is the time that that you prune things or you sacrifice. You know, sacrifice is the word we hear maybe more often, but you know, you want to be thinking about what no longer works in your life, what you would be better off cutting out of your life. So, you know, that's what we're going to sort of bring to the fore tonight and have you start to think about. Because when you cut away the things that, you know, are sort of just sapping your energy, it helps you flourish. You can, you know, you can focus your energy on things that will help you move forward, help you be better than you are, just sort of, you know, help you evolve and uplift your spirits and nourish yourself, all sorts of positive things. So tonight I'm going to save you from you have to hear any politics. You know, we've been talking about politics for the last couple sacred, you know, the last couple Voices of the Sacred Feminine shows. You know, we don't have long before the election, but if you want to hear politics, you can play some of the shows from the in the archives, the last few shows we've been talking about what's going on. But tonight we're going to just, no bees in the bonnet tonight. We're just going to sort of take it you know, take it slow and easy and be in a different sort of headspace tonight. Well, you know, I am trying to stall a little bit here to give Flash some time, but I don't know what to say about that girl. She just is not making it again tonight, and I don't know what that's about unless something happened with her ritual and it's running late. Unless that might be her. Let's see. Hang on. I think she might have just popped up on the switchboard. Let's see. Hey, Flash, is that you?
Hey, dear. Mary Lamas.
Hi, I was starting to get worried there. I was stalling for the
couple
minutes.
Well, you usually do a long thing in the beginning, so I figured I would, you know.
No, not on sacred, you know, not these nights usually.
Okay.
But, so anyway, we were waiting for you here because I know you said that there's some important stuff brewing out there in the cosmos. So why don't you go ahead and jump in and tell us what's in store for us.
Okay, well, I don't know if you've been feeling it, but the last several days and part of it, you know, we just had a full moon, and it was a full moon in Aquarius. And it's interesting to have one of the holidays fall so close to a full moon. It always kicks them both up a notch or two. But Aquarius is an air sign, but it's also ruled by the planet Uranus. And we've been having such a time with the Uranian energy over the last year or two. And it's gotten all our vibrations, sometimes jangled, sometimes more intense. But for me, I really am experiencing the energy intensified about tenfold over the last 3 to 5 days. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, actually, it's almost as if you were listening to what I was saying. You know, I was telling listeners that, you know, usually Mercury retrograde doesn't affect me much. You know, I'm the organized Virgo. Life, you know, it's got to be rough out there to, you know, to sort of rock my boat. But
right.
My boat has really been rocked this last week. It's been rough.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure that's also, I think Mercury, I think, is in Libra, not Libra, I'm sorry, Leo now, and has been there for a while. And that's a different kind of energy for you. But I don't know if you read this month's Astro Flash.
No, I haven't had a chance, so it's all going to be fresh and new for me.
Okay. Well, I especially talk to the Virgos who love that organization. They don't like anything messy. It's got to be, you know.
Yep, I don't
really,
like anything messy.
It's real hard during the retrograde because Mercury rules Virgo. So it can be a challenge. But, you know, it's not like it's a bad thing. It's just not a good time for moving forward.
Okay.
And as long as you can clean out the closets and organize the papers and get things arranged, you don't want to arrange anything much for the future so much because, you know, you can put something together and you'll find that when the day comes, it's like nobody remembered.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I had years and years ago, I was playing more music gigs out and I had a contract and everything. And it was, you know, looked very, very proper. 2 weekends in a row, sign on the dotted line, X amount of dollars. And in the newspaper, as the date comes up, I'm not seeing my name in the paper. I call up, and I didn't, you know, it was, Mercury was not retrograde when I signed the contract, but the day that it was for, Mercury's retrograde. So I call up the hotel, and they say, we had a change of management, and your contract is void.
Ah, so, thanks for telling me.
You know, so, right. So on either end of things, you can have these little difficulties.
Okay, you said this is going to happen like through the 8th, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And
yeah, I remember that.
After that, you know, you can really move forward beautifully. And, you know, the Virgos, like I said, know that order. But the planet Neptune is opposing Virgo. Neptune is in Pisces now, and it's going to be for a long, long time. So the reason to take note is you're going to have to start adjusting to this. And it makes the Virgos uncomfortable because of the nature of their being. And whenever you have an opposition energy, which is Pisces to Virgo, there's a pull, and it can pull one into more balance. Pisces can sometimes be too unstructured, too go with the flow. Virgo can be too much structure. So you have an opposition between those two signs, and ideally, best of both worlds, you wind up in the middle.
Okay.
Where you can have the view of the big picture, but get the details right.
Okay.
And that's the ideal of the combination of that energy.
So, okay, I got a little bit confused there. So you're saying it's Neptune that's going to be influencing Virgo for a while? Is that what you said?
Years, yes.
For years. But so, I forgive me, Mercury retrograde, I can blame that. I can't blame it on everything. You know, I'm not totally understanding, I mean, especially I want to pay attention if it's going to be affecting me potentially and other Virgos out there for a long time. How is it going to be different?
Well, basically, now, I don't remember your chart exactly, but Neptune right now is in the first few degrees of Pisces. So if you have something in the first few degrees of Virgo, of course, it's going to be influencing you most strongly.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, just like giving it a more generic view for Virgos, I think the point of it is to loosen you all up.
Oh, okay. To be a little more spontaneous.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, you're going to be forced to. And the feeling in the beginning of that shift is like, my world feels like it's on really shaky ground.
So
I don't know where to put my foot down.
So it's sort of like for a Virgo, it'll feel like flying by the seat of your pants.
Yes.
Because everything isn't on that list that you
yes.
planned for.
So you're
going
to get used to, you know, flying a little bit more.
Okay, okay.
And that can be
cool.
Very enjoyable.
Okay.
You know, just don't start getting fearful about it, like you're losing your mind or anything, or the world is getting too crazy. I mean, the world is getting too crazy, let's face it. But for the Virgos, it's a matter of let's see the big picture, too, and not just the minutiae.
Okay. Well, you know, I have Sam on the line. She's our Sacred Sunday priestess. She's going to help me. She's going to help me do... The ritual on the radio when we're done with with the astro flash.
Wonderful.
Sam, what's your sign?
I'm a Gemini.
So how is Gemini affected, Flash?
Well, it depends which one you're looking at, but
good point.
Yeah, there's definitely two of me.
On a good day, at least. The thing that people need to remember about Geminis, if you're really close to them, they don't lie, but they do change their mind.
True. Guilty.
For me, and I'm a Pisces, I'm very mutable, and if I feel one way in the morning, I'm going to feel the same way at night in all likelihood. Not so with a Gemini. And it depends, you know, what they're talking about, who they're talking to. Gemini is also ruled by Mercury.
Yeah.
So the two of you are Mercury ruled. So the retrogrades may affect you a bit more than others. But it's been a good time for Geminis, actually. There's been a lot of planets in Gemini. And so you've been probably feeling like, what do they call it, a one-armed paper hanger or something, busy?
Yeah, you could say that.
You know, just like your dance card is triple booked.
Yes, absolutely.
And you're finding it all very, very fascinating. However, sometimes you can probably annoy people who thought they had a date with you, and there were two others that maybe came in ahead.
Well, I try and have integrity and hold up to my word when it comes to, you know, keeping my promises and dates with people.
That's good.
Even if it's uncomfortable, I try and follow through.
Yeah.
It's important to me for other people to do it, so I try and follow that path.
Wonderful. And evolve Gemini. But see, sometimes they don't even mean to and don't even realize that that's happened, but you've obviously matured. And, you know, talking to you as just a sun sign person, that's just a piece of who you are.
Right.
And that can be more and less true, what I was saying, depending on what else you have going on in your chart. But all of us have been getting the great big scramble from the Uranus-Pluto square and it's been going on for months, and it hit the first time really intensely, I think it was the 23rd of July, and that was a big shakeup. But it's continuing, and it's still going on, and we will be dealing with these energies. If you remember Arab Spring, and then everything thereafter, boom, 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 in a row, revolution, change, everything going upside down.
So that's still in motion, that whole...
It's in more motion.
Okay.
It's in stronger motion, because then that was only Uranus going into Aries. It hadn't come to the exact 90-degree aspect that it's in now with Pluto. And Pluto is all about radical change. Tear it up from the root. Pluto's like, hey, look, we got to dig that thing up. We're not going to put a liberal Band-Aid over it. Sorry. You can think that we're just going to have things as they were, but just a little better. But nope, no thank you. And that's some of that Occupy energy. You know, it's really anti-establishment. And Pluto's in Capricorn, so it wants to take on the corporate world. So we're seeing governments and corporate and all that shaking at its foundation, which it needs to do, and that's exactly what's trying to happen. And Pluto says, we're going to take some time with this because I want it out by the root. Uranus, on the other hand, is in Aries. It's a little hasty. And Uranus is like, sorry, Pluto, I'm not into your game. Yeah, I like the idea, but it's way too slow. If I wait for it being your way, you know, the world will come to an end and back three times. So we're going to do it my way. And, you know, I may bring in some surprises. You may not see me coming. And that's Uranian way.
So let me ask you, I mean, and it just may be that I've been too busy to pay close attention every day like I usually do. I've only been paying attention every few days now. But it feels like nothing is really happening other than the Olympics and Nip the Twit out there making a fool of himself in Europe. Other than that, I mean, it doesn't really feel like anything's being shaken up. Is it because it's still hidden?
Yes. That's part of it. See, they'll do these big things like the Olympics and then make it the only story. Or when that crazy dude, who I've got
Romero.
A lot of thoughts about him, remember I took the night I was on last?
Yes.
I told you.
It happened the next day, didn't it, or that night?
That night.
Yes.
I told you something was getting ready to blow.
Yeah.
And I can tell you a little bit more about that, but basically they'll get these great big stories, and that's all you see. And while that's happening, they can sneak things under the radar that people are paying less attention to, like the fact that right after the event in Colorado, Obama and a whole world group pushed through something at the UN, some bill, so that regular people could no longer have guns. Now, I'm not a gun person, believe me, but when a government says we're taking away all the guns...
In the United States? And the NRA isn't saying anything?
Yes.
I mean, the NRA is like so paranoid. I mean, it's unimaginable that it's, you know, the right-wingers aren't in the street.
Right. Well, they may be. You know, some of this stuff is going under the radar. And, of course, you have a big, horrible shooting, and everybody's like, take away the guns.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, certainly take away all these salt things. I don't want a gun. I don't believe in guns. I got enough crystals, you know. But there is some global point of view that when a government takes away all the guns, what are they up to?
Hmm. Very interesting. Okay.
And this is not just here. This was global. It went through the UN.
Okay. I didn't know that. Yep. Okay.
So, you know, there are these things called false flag events. And it's very, very likely that the guy who was the shooter was a Manchurian candidate and not just a crazy person on drugs.
So what do you mean by that? I mean, I know you're talking metaphorically. I mean,
no.
The Manchurian candidate, I think, was supposed to kill the president.
Well, yeah, but they have them all through the years. They've been getting these loners to kill important people.
So are you saying you think he intended to kill somebody important?
No, I think that he got programmed. He was being funded by the CIA at the school he's
okay.
in.
Okay.
And
okay. Now, Flash, I got to tell you, you're sounding paranoid.
No, I'm not. I'm not really.
I mean, I just posted on Facebook, and everybody ignored me. I have to admit, I kept waiting for somebody to say something. You know, Gore Vidal died.
Yes.
And Gore Vidal believed, because, I mean, he was a scholar. He was an author. He was rich. He rubbed shoulders with the movers and shakers of the world. He knew the people that made decisions that affect the rest of the world. He believed that the Bush administration knew that 9/11 was going to happen. Now, I don't think that he went so far as to say they planned it. I just know he believed they knew it was going to happen. And I posted that on Facebook, and not one person said anything. You know, and now I know when I say that, I sort of, you know, think people probably think I'm a conspiracy theorist, and I am about some things. I don't,
well,
you know, about the Kennedy,
right.
Yeah, about the Kennedy assassination and everything. I don't believe the official story.
Well, that's what I'm talking about periodically there's a Manchurian candidate that gets, who's a loner. I mean, you know, with Kennedy, it was so easy to see. And
mm-hmm.
some of the following situations are a little more difficult to see, but they happen.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, let's just say the Bush industry was complicit.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's plenty of information on the Internet. You can look at this anywhere
right.
and find tons of information from many sources about how they couldn't not have known. And
mm-hmm.
these events are called false flag events.
Okay.
And there's probably one coming up involving, you know, the Olympics.
You mean like a terrorist attack or something?
Well, it may not happen that way, and hopefully it doesn't. There's a lot of people who want it not to. But there's a lot of people that do want to be seen. And they'll create this global picture that everybody is watching or has to watch or is, you know, encouraged toward watching. It's the big picture, and in the big picture you'll find that certain elements will want to show up. They'll want to be seen, and there's so much information. I watched recently the Olympics, the beginning part, and it gave me the creeps, I have to say.
The smoke, they were like paying homage to the smokestacks. Is that the,
but they were also, they also were essentially killing the tree, which, you know, if you think back to like the Avatar movie,
mm-hmm. yeah.
that was representational of the earth, of the mother.
Right.
And they uprooted the tree that was, I'm trying to remember the place in Britain. The tour.
The tour, yeah.
Yeah, it was on the top
of
the tour, and they
yeah.
yanked out the tree. And from there, they moved towards less and less beauty.
Yeah.
You know, let's just call it that.
Yeah.
And to me, it was really like, okay, we have the power to run the world, and the patriarchy is doing it this way, and this is what we want. We want to tear up the tree. And we want to bring the industry. And, yeah, doesn't the world look grayer and grayer and grimmer
mm-hmm.
and grimmer as this whole thing unfolds in front of you?
Yeah.
And it felt to me very disempowering, which is, you know, the message that is trying to be given out. And
it was almost like a brainwashing in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
I know what you mean. Because, you know, you saw the rich men in their suits, you know,
yes.
holding on to their vest. And then you saw the poor little workers with the grubby faces.
Right.
And it's like, let's celebrate this.
Right, exactly. I've never seen such a horror in my life in a place where one would be thinking of celebration.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like they were oblivious, too. That's the scary part.
Well, that's what they're trying to do. That's the point. And the point is, you know, we are in some level a fear-based organism. But it's very important that we unlearn that. Very, very important. Because that's how any level of negativity gets to take hold.
Mm-hmm.
We can either be in a state of love or a state of fear. We can't be in both at the same time. And staying in that state of love is so wonderful. And it can really change the world when we start to see, rather than the men with their shirts and then the poor people and they're dragging that bale, lifting that, you know, all that hard work, if there was a vision, we're talking about bringing the world together, seeing everybody holding hands.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
would look good to me. I
yeah.
like that kind of global view.
Right.
But this
or,
is a global
and on equal,
view of oppression.
Yeah, on equal footing, too. Not
yes.
The, yeah, not the, the dichotomy between the two classes, which was so stark.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. They're very clearly trying to get that point across. And we are, it is so, so important for each one of us to take up that personal responsibility now, which is to hold the highest vibration you can for as much of the time as you can.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter what else you're doing. That's premier importance.
Okay.
There's nothing that can be done that's more important than that. And it doesn't mean that's all you do if you don't choose to, you know, there's other things that can be done. But that point, and what they were using the world stage to throw a great big dark shroud over everybody and to try and say, see, all right, this is your life.
Mm-hmm.
Love
mm-hmm.
it or leave it, you know, here it is, this is what it's going to be.
Yeah.
And no way out. You know, you really had that kind of sense of everybody in lockstep.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
that's simply not a good thing for the planet.
Yeah, or the majority of us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. So, what Uranus and Pluto, even though it's making us uncomfortable, and it's also affecting our nervous systems and our bodies. So if some of you have been feeling like either you're losing it or you got too many headaches or your back hurts, your spine hurts, everything hurts, what the hell is going on? You go to the doctor can't find anything. You're not losing it. You're not falling apart. But maybe some parts of you are. We are being reorganized. Even our DNA, that these energies shake us to our core. And you don't want to resist. We can go through this as a dance, or we can go through this as a struggle. But we're going to go through it.
Okay. So are there any specific days in the month, like you were talking about these flag events?
Yeah.
I mean, are you seeing any specific days to be watching for? Or?
Well, I know the 15th of August is going to be a rip-roaring, challenging day for many people in many ways. But I'm going to back off that for a minute and just tell you a little bit of the good news. Is that Venus is going into Cancer on August 7th, that's a Tuesday. And that will bring that love energy in a bit sweeter. It's been in Gemini for quite some time, and that's made it a little more heady, a little more intellectual, which is fine. But in terms of Venus really being allowed to use its nurturing energy more, you're going to start to feel it after the 7th a lot more. And it could warm up the energy of the planet, too. We don't need any more heat, mind you, but I'm talking about more emotion
mm-hmm.
in a good way, in
mm-hmm.
a good way. But, you know, the United States is a cancer country. And I don't mean the disease, but the sun sign of the United States is in Cancer. So with Venus going into Cancer, it could also suggest perhaps the economy picking up a little bit. And also good news for women.
Hmm.
Because we've had a lot of bad news.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Republicans yesterday were comparing, you know, women's access to birth control to 9/11 and Pearl Harbor.
They're so smart.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what a brilliant analogy.
I know, yeah.
I call them the repugs. You got a good word for them, too.
Yeah, re-thugs. Thugs.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they feel like to me. They feel like they're just thugs, beating, you know, bullying everybody, beating us all up, you know.
And they're also like two-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that the Dems, that aren't just the roll-over, play-dead Dems, they say yes, the others say no, even if it was their idea in the first place.
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, we've seen them do that over and over again.
Yeah, so we've got that problem. But on the 15th, a lot more power struggles. Could be a challenging day for people in relationships. And it could also be a very volatile time on the planet. And when I say volatile, it can be politics. It can be an event like more shootings. It could be Syria busted totally wide open. And it could be an earthquake. And it could be all three. You know, it's lately we don't have the either or. We usually have the both and going on.
Well, you know, what I'd like to see happen is Mitt Romney's tax returns leak out, and we'll find out that he hasn't paid taxes in 10 years, which
mm-hmm.
Harry Reid alluded to. And you know that might bust things wide open.
Yeah,
you know, that might even get his base mad at him.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some wild shit with this particular election. I haven't even figured out just how strange yet, but it's going to be a doozy. And
are you going to do Romney and Obama's charts? And
I will. I'll look at that.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Okay. So then after the 15th, what do we have for the last half of the month?
Well, this is actually August. Is going to be a smoother month than July was. July was pretty bumpy. We're going to finish the month with a second full moon. It'll be a full, like we started yesterday
mm-hmm.
with the full moon in Aquarius. We'll end the month with a full moon in Pisces. And that will be a very, very strong moon because Neptune is also in Pisces. So it's a very psychic moon, a very moody and brilliant kind of moon. It could bring us some big water weather. Real
hurricane.
Likely. Hurricane, flood, tsunami, big water issues, but something. And, you know, just for us, it's a really good time if you want to do some dream work, if you want to do some psychic development of some kind, that would be a great moon to really accentuate your work with dreams and anything psychic and metaphysical.
Okay.
Because any of the work that we do now, if we're just like a little bit psychic and we put in some energy that way, it's huge.
Okay. So
and
what's the date of the second full moon?
The 31st. They call that a blue moon.
Okay.
And, you know, I think it's going to have some real lovely energy to it, but, you know, big water is big water.
Okay.
And, you know, that can be very emotional. Whenever the moon is full, whatever sign it's full in becomes bigger.
Okay.
And it's going to be a sweeter month all in all.
All right, well, that's good because, you know, it had, like you said, it has been rough. We need a little bit of a break.
Mm-hmm.
So anything else? I mean, does that sort of cover everything you felt we needed to know for August?
I'm thinking. I think that's the most of it. You know, it's just real important to keep the vibration high. We have a new moon in Leo on the 17th. And I think that'll be a very creative time, real good time to get your creative projects started or get them out.
Okay. All right.
And,
sounds good.
And, you know, the thing about the retrograde, too, to backtrack a little, because, of course, it's retrograde, so we have to backtrack. Whatever's been held back with you or in the world, it comes forward after the retrograde. And that can be good and bad news. Because, you know, if there's been some kind of a plot or a scheme that's been cooked up and the retrograde is done, we may see the thing come flying out and a government going down or a banker going down or something.
Okay.
That's been brewing. But it, do not feel for a moment nothing's going on.
Okay. Well, things did sort of feel stagnant to me, but, you know, it just felt, or maybe it's because none of the stuff that I would like to have happening is happening. You know, I thought by now, you know, Occupy would be back in the streets again, and, you know, and I guess...
Well, they were
really
in Anaheim.
Well, that's true. You know, that's true. But, you know, I was, you know, I wasn't thinking so local. You know, I was hoping that, you know, we were going to, you know, see some marches in the street before the election, or maybe something will happen
with the
conventions, the Democratic and Republic convention, which...
Count on it.
Yeah, one of them, I think, is at the end of this month. I think the Republican convention's at the end of August.
Yep, right here in Tampa.
Yeah.
I'm a couple hours away, but I know I won't be going.
Okay. Well, Flash, why don't you go ahead and tell listeners your website again in case they want to go read more specifically about their particular sign and
sure.
They can read your Astro Flash.
Yeah. You can find me at flashsilvermoon.com. And Astro Flash is the very first thing on the page, so you can't go wrong with that. And you can also sign up there should you want to get it regularly right into your own mailbox.
Okay.
And of course, I do psychic work and astrological work and work with the animals as well, which I adore.
Well, Sam, before Flash goes, did you have any comments or any questions you maybe wanted to ask Flash from all of the information she gave us?
Well, I would. I have a question about being a Gemini, and
yeah.
Maybe this is a really ignorant, stupid question.
Probably not.
But you know, we're apparently ruled by Mercury.
Yes.
I never have a problem with Mercury retrograde. Is there something wrong with me?
No, it's good. It you know, it doesn't have to be problematic.
Everybody just warns me, oh, Mercury's going into retrograde, don't do this and don't do that, and I just don't give it any energy, and I never seem to have a problem. Is there something I should be maybe looking at with this?
Well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But seriously, if it's not bugging you, don't bug it.
Okay.
You know, and you may have been born with a retrograde Mercury, and I think some of the folks that have that going on don't necessarily have as much trouble with it.
Oh, well, I'll have to go onto your website and connect with you and find out more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like to make too many declarations about someone just with their sun sign. It's way too limited, and,
yeah.
You know, you can't get a true accuracy. Sometimes someone might have sun in Gemini. That's the end of the Gemini story, and then tons of other things going on, in which case, the Gemini can get downplayed a little bit, but it's still your essence. And
yeah.
So there still is that you're a very curious person, very, very curious. You want to know a lot. You want to communicate a lot.
Well,
and,
boy, is that true.
And be social. So those are like real key things that no matter what are going to be somewhat true for you.
Indeed. Fascinating. Well, I'll have to go and check out more of what you have to offer on your website.
Sure. Let's hear from you.
Great.
All right. Well, Flash, thank you so much. Now, just a reminder for you and for listeners, I guess you could say I messed up my calendar for September. And so we don't actually have a sacred salon and an astro flash in September. And also, too, because I'm taking a week vacation, so there are not quite as many shows that month. So I won't, you know, you won't be joining us again until the first week in October.
Okay.
So I just wanted to let you know, and it would be awesome if by then you could tell us about Obama and Romney's charts with the election only a month away.
Yeah. By then, you never know. You know, we might even have, I just had this feeling when we're talking, we might even have a different Republican candidate.
Interesting. Like Ron Paul or something, or?
I don't think he can, I don't
muster up enough.
I don't think they'll get behind him.
Yeah.
As long as
I mean,
not
the clowns that they offered, it was pretty pathetic. And that Romney wound up looking like the good guy.
What did you say, Sam?
I said as long as it's not Sarah.
Sarah? Oh no, it could never be Sarah Palin. But and I don't think Jeb Bush would risk it. You're in from Florida. What do you think, Flash?
I think he's waiting for the next election. But
yeah. You
never know. This is going to be a weird one, and there's going to be surprises. I just haven't honed in exactly on what. How they're going to manifest it yet.
Well, I would pay to watch this convention. I would literally pay. I think it's going to be a circus.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Have
You're
a wonderful Lammas ritual.
You
I
too.
Thank you for taking time to talk to to us and to listeners, because I know your folks there are waiting for you to start your ritual. So thank you so much, Flash.
Well, we have just actually finished it, made it work early so we could work the show in.
Oh, good, good. Well, thank you.
Well,
we
appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. You're very welcome. Lovely to be with you.
Okay, good night.
Night.
Okay, listeners. Well, let's start to shift gears a little bit here. Sam and I are going to start meandering into our ritual on the radio. Let's sort of, go to that place that we go to when we want to connect with our divine self, want to connect with Goddess. If you can, stop thinking about all the stuff we've been talking about with Flash and, it's sort of time to shift from our left brain into our right brain. We want to go in. To our intuitive self, to, the feeling part of us, where we feel connected to the universe, where we feel connected to each other, our heart space, that's where we want to go to for the rest of the show, for our ritual on the radio. So, may your mind be clear. May your heart be pure. And may your body be strong. Well, we only do this once a month, and maybe you're even new to our ritual on the radio. So I want to just begin by recognizing the purpose of our sacred salon. We like to say there is no one way, and we repeat that. We remind ourselves, because it's vital in today's world, there is no one way to embrace, engage, and acknowledge the divine in our daily lives. We gather for ritual on the radio to nourish our souls, to come together in community to uplift our spirits. We use these moments in time from our busy lives to help that connection with deity to manifest, to bring alive the memory of the teachings of the past, and to continue benefiting from this now and in our future. And we always encourage you to seek your own best path to the divine. Remember that it's always both within us and outside ourselves. The divine surrounds us and permeates us. We are really never alone. besides reclaiming the knowledge and wisdom of our ancient ones, we should also remind ourselves of these values and how they pertain to our current reality. Even the most experienced of us have things yet to learn. So we invite you to join us as we share our experiences to help you facilitate your own journey. Whether we're at Sacred Sunday or whether we're doing our Sacred Salon here for Ritual on the Radio, this service, it's intended to sort of provide a safe space where we can look forward to each month to carve out sacred time for yourself or your family or friends if they're there with you. It's a niche where you can be with like-minded community to seek out the divine within, to strengthen that connection with deity. And we try to provide an environment where you can slip out of our commercialized corporate culture and slip into our vision of a goddess-centered world. And we do that using poetry and mythology, ritual, folk and mystery traditions. So when you're here with us, we just ask that you feel free to open yourself to new ideas and feelings. And, you know, after the ritual, you might want to, you know, get your journal out and, you know, write down your thoughts, you know, anything that might come up for you during the course of our Sacred Salon. And, you know, be prepared to find your creativity, your wildness, maybe even your wisdom. And it's probably important to mention that, you know, with our vision, with our focus, we really strive for balance, peace, harmony, and love, so that we honor the sacred feminine as primary, complemented by the divine masculine. We strive to be aware, to appreciate, to attune ourselves with the divine force, our cosmic mother, she of 10,000 names, by taking time out to celebrate nature and the changing seasons, by honoring the external cycles and changes, we are guided to maybe more graciously accept our own personal cycles and changes within and find a greater sense of harmony and balance in ourselves and us within the environment. From this balance comes a sense of continuity in life and wholeness in ourselves, and we feel the interconnection that we are part of the web, a strand of the great tapestry of life birthed by the great She. So together in sacred space, let's take on, for this month of Lammas, let's take on a new awareness of sacrifice in order to prune away that which no longer serves us, so we might achieve wholeness, so that we might flourish, so that we might become the best that we can be. So Sam is going to lead us in our invocation that starts out our Sacred Sunday service.
Yes, we do these two bookend prayers, and I invite the congregation listening or listeners to say this in your heart. I will say the main line, and then I will read the verse, and then I will repeat the line, and you can say it in your heart. We have forgotten who we are. We have forgotten who we are. We have alienated ourselves from the unfolding of the cosmos. We have become estranged from the movements of the earth. We have turned our backs on the cycles of life. We have forgotten who we are. We have sought only our own security. We have exploited simply for our own ends. We have distorted our knowledge, and we have abused our power. We have forgotten who we are. Now the land is barren, and the waters are poisoned, and the air is polluted. We have forgotten who we are. Now the forests are dying, and the creatures are disappearing, and the humans are despairing. We have forgotten who we are. We ask forgiveness. We ask for the gift of remembering. We ask for the strength to change.
Okay, thank you, Sam. That was lovely. That feels so touching. It feels so appropriate because I think we have forgotten.
We have.
So, listeners, we're coming to our candle lighting part of the Sacred Salon, and as usual, some of you may actually put three candles out in front of you and light them as we go through this part of the ritual, or, you don't actually have to have the physical candles. You can just, imagine them in your mind's eye. So, whether the candle be virtual or the candle be physical, we're going to light our first candle. It's the concept candle. And we light this candle for the theme of today's ritual, and that is pruning our divine tree, sacrificing what no longer serves us. So either light the first candle or see that candle flame come alive in your mind. And we'll go to the second candle, the one in the middle. It's the divinity candle. And we light this candle to honor some of the goddesses that Sam is going to share with us in our service tonight. We light this candle to honor Ceres, Demeter, and the Corn Mother. And our third candle, the perpetuation candle. We light this candle because we would like to go forward renewed in understanding from our letting go, from our sacrifice. We prune the tree of our being of dead branches that waste our precious energy and life force. And by doing so, we take part in the sacred mysteries of Gaia. We embrace the cycles of transformation and growth. We are one with you, Great Mothers. Let us go forward free to be what we are, and to become what we are capable of becoming. This is our gift to ourselves and to you, Divine Mother. Goddess, make us strong in spirit, courageous in action, gentle of heart. Let us act in wisdom. Help us to conquer fear and doubt and discover our own hidden gifts. Teach us to meet others with compassion, to be a source of healing energies, and to face each day with strength, tenacity, hope, and joy. So we have next for you the Ten Commandments, which Sam will share with you, the Ten Commandments of our Mother Earth.
Thank you, Karen. We found these online, and we thought that they were pretty appropriate because everyone likes the Ten Commandments, but this is more goddess-oriented. It was written by Ernest Kallenbach in 1990. So here we go. Thou shalt love and honor the earth, for it blesses thy life and governs thy survival. Thou shalt keep each day sacred to the earth and celebrate the turning of its seasons. Thou shalt not hold thyself above other living things, nor drive them to extinction. Thou shalt give thanks for thy food to the creatures and plants that nourish thee. Thou shalt limit thy offspring, for multitudes of people are a burden unto the Mother Earth. Thou shalt not kill nor waste Earth's riches upon weapons of war. Thou shalt not pursue profit at the earth's expense, but strive to restore its damaged majesty. Thou shalt not hide from thyself or others the consequences of thy actions upon the earth. Thou shalt not steal from future generations by impoverishing or poisoning the earth. And finally, thou shalt consume material goods in moderation so all may share Earth's bounty.
So appropriate, for, revisioning the world, goddess ideals, for a sustainable future.
If we just think these things every day, like we think of the Ten Commandments every day and live it and walk it, it would just be so helpful.
Oh, it would. It would change the world, literally. I mean, it's that powerful.
Yeah.
Well, let us remember we're each part of the divine. We are each part of the cosmos. We affect each other and the world around us. And with that comes great responsibility. Let us pray that we may at all times keep our minds open to new ideas and shun dogma, that we may grow in our understanding of the nature of all living beings and our connectedness with the natural world, that we may become ever more filled with generosity of spirit and true compassion and love for all life. We pray that all of humanity one day feel the pulse of Mother Earth in their feet as they tread, and that humankind find the faith to believe in the messages carried by their dreams and see beyond the visible world. Lord Byron wrote, "There is music in the sighing of a reed, there is music in the gushing of a rill, there is music in all things if men had ears. Their earth is but an echo of the spheres." We are but a microcosm of the macrocosm. That's what Lord Byron is talking about. We reflect and echo the harmonies of the music of the spheres. We are but one human family as time and distance dims. We are part of the continuum if we would only listen closely enough to hear it. Well, listeners, let me just tell you how the rest of the Sacred Salon is going to go tonight. I have a message I want to share with you about pruning our divine tree. I think you'll find it interesting, and you can take away, maybe some meaning from it for self-help, to help you improve your life. Then Sam is going to talk to us about the Corn Mother and Ceres and Demeter. And then we're going to have a meditation, and I'm going to make some suggestions for you about maybe doing a little ritual of your own once we're off the air. So we're going to go into our message for you about pruning our divine tree. Well, you know, when we do our Sacred Sunday services or our messages, or we do ritual on the radio here, we always try to talk about something that enlightens, that gives assistance or self-help, that maybe enables us to understand how we might immerse ourselves within the natural cycles of nature, how we can live a goddess-inspired life, or see how nature shows us a template for living. And at this time of the year, we're approaching Lammas, or the first fruits. It's a time when we celebrate and enjoy the outcome of our daily toil, the investments, the work, the projects we focused on since January. The fruits or seeds of our labors should be sprouting some progress. It's time when the gods or goddesses sacrifice themselves so we might have plenty. And it's a time when we should reciprocate and sacrifice something to them as well. Well, sacrifice. Think about that word. I hate that word. I resisted writing this message because it smacks so much of my Christian background, which I totally reject. That sad figure of Jesus sacrificed on the cross, that's what that word meant to me. And his father who demanded the death of his son to save the world. You know, that just never felt right to me. But then again, maybe you've read some of the stuff I've written about how I see the Abrahamic God as being kind of a sociopath. He's not someone you'd want as a neighbor, a husband, a brother, much less a deity having a hand in your life. We can get into whether we create God or God creates us, and I can tell you, if we create that sort of God, the kind that demands we sacrifice our children, then, you know, I won't have a hand in creating him or perpetuating his existence. But Sam helped me look at sacrifice differently and put it in a different and useful context, one that seemed helpful and healthy and not so much like I was engaging in sadism or masochism. So first, let's think about the meaning of sacrifice. Sacrifice is a noun, it's because sacrifice is a thing, and it's also a verb. It means to make sacred. It's an act of surrendering a possession as an offering to a divine or supernatural figure. We think sometimes of the slaughterhouses of Artemis in Ephesus, which some of us may know about, that existed in the ancient world, or the deities that sacrifice themselves for us, which Sam is going to cover in a little bit here. It's an act of giving up something valued for the sake of something else regarded as more important or worthy. You know the saying, we must all be prepared to make sacrifices. Well, you know, I can still hear my mother telling me, Karen, you have to suffer to be beautiful. And she always told me that when I was young, and I'd complain about sleeping with hair rollers. And don't even get me going on how patriarchy creates this impossible standard for what beauty, what's beautiful and sexy, and all the people that sacrifice their money and effort to try to achieve it. Obviously, sacrifice can be a bit warped. But we're going to talk about some healthy sacrifice. I think we can get something relevant from this natural cycle by thinking of this time of the year as a time when we prune our divine tree. And nature again gives us the metaphor. Take the rose bush, for example. A rose blooms and dies, then when it served its purpose and its life cycle is over, the flower to the stalk needs to be cut away. Now, the plant will do it naturally, or we can assist it. Why? Well, to encourage its optimum growth, we can cut away the dead, in other words, what no longer serves, because that dead part hanging on the plant, it drains the life force. We don't want the plant to have to waste its energy sending life force to the dead part, so we assist it by cutting away, and the plant then can achieve that optimum growth more quickly. We are encouraging the greater, later, full flourishing of the most promising branches that remain. So, back to the idea of pruning our divine tree, ourselves, our divine self. How can we apply that to our lives? Are we putting energy into the most promising of our branches, or are we still sending energy to places where it's wasted? Well, you know, a good friend of mine Facebooked me because she thought I could relate. She didn't want me to waste my energy. She wrote me and said, when a liberal focuses on what the conservatives are doing, when we rant, when we demonstrate, when we get angry, are we giving twice the energy to the conservative agenda, theirs and ours? Might we be better off putting our energy into the solution, not the obsolete or selfish ideology they hold, so that we help the shift toward enlightenment and awakening, peace and harmony? I think that's really good food for thought. I had to ask myself if I needed to prune a behavior of mine that maybe made me feel validated or powerful, maybe even superior, or at least replace my activism with a different kind of activism. Well, the jury's out. I'm still thinking about it. But maybe I need to prune one method of activism for a better method. And then also, here's another example. Recently, I had a theta healing for my shoulder. The healer asked me if my pain was serving me. I didn't understand that question at first. How, I asked, could the pain and expense of the injury possibly be serving me? And then he gave me the example of a disabled person, for instance, whose disability might be serving him or her because the person gets attention, sympathy, special consideration. Maybe the person gets a handicap parking sign for his car window. Maybe he gets disability and doesn't have to work. The healer's point was, we need to be sure we want to heal. I needed to check in with myself and see if I needed to prune away any confusion or deep-seated thinking that might be standing in the way of my health flourishing and healing. And here's some other examples that might be more obvious or maybe you can relate to, because this is all very personal and subjective. You know, we can prune away bad habits to achieve better performance. Maybe we eat the wrong food or too much. Maybe we drink or smoke too much. Maybe we need to prune toxic people out of our lives and replace them with healthy, supportive, inspirational people that help us flourish. And what about our attitude? If we're reactional, maybe we need to prune that away and replace it with a proactive way of being. Negative thoughts, here's another thing. If thoughts are really things and we create our reality with our thoughts, then we better have a way to prune away the negative emotions and thoughts because they siphon off our life force, our creative energy, and they prevent us from flourishing. All right, take gossip. There's another one. Maybe you've been wronged. Someone has really screwed you over. And you just keep thinking about it. You keep rehashing it. You keep telling the story over and over again. Or maybe your friend does this. It's exhausting for the teller and the listener. We have to find a way to dissolve that tendency, even if we're wronged, because not moving on is keeping us stuck in negative emotions. It's wasting our energy on things that really don't serve our growth, even if telling the injustice again and again makes you feel better in the moment. Maybe help your friend or yourself to see that you're not being served if they waste so much time and energy playing the same sad movie over and over. Help yourself or your friend to write a new story. Understand that perhaps anger makes us feel powerful, but there's a time to let it go and invest your time and energy in a more positive emotion or action. In other words, get rid of the drama and the drama queens in your life. You want your tree to sprout ecstasy, joy, bliss, knowing, empowerment, freedom, love, appreciation, gratitude, passion, enthusiasm, happiness, optimism, confidence, curiosity, self-esteem, contentment, relaxation, sharing and caring. Those are the leaves you want on your branches. And you want to prune away disappointment, doubt, confusion, uncertainty, worry, negative expectations, discouragement, revenge, gossip, hatred, jealousy, guilt, blame, fear, sadness, grief, depression, shame, unworthiness, despair, apathy. Think about it. Are you being held back by any of those things? So stop and think next time things aren't feeling bountiful. Have you been cultivating the dead branches, people, emotion, and activities that sap you and produce nothing positive? Or have you been cultivating the branches that are potent with possibility for a beautiful garden or orchard that feeds and nourishes you? So Islamists is, you know, this time, we understand it's a time of sacrifice. That means prunings, farewells, separations, as well as harvest and preserves. Interesting new concept, huh? So ask yourself, do you have any regrets? Were there things you meant to do that aren't coming to fruition? Is it time to prune those ideas or put more energy into them? Is there something you have to say farewell to? People, ideas, a job, relationship, things? What's passing from your life? What's over? Release them. Just let them go. You can write them on a piece of paper and burn them. You can crumple them up and flush them down the toilet. You can donate that clutter in your home to a worthy charity. You can break up with that friend that is constantly a flake or spews negativity. And then what about what you've harvested or accomplished? Can you build on that? Let that become your new foundation. Don't forget to write down what you've managed to manifest, because that's important too. Don't take your successes for granted. Celebrate your accomplishment. That's the toil of your labor. And then what shall you preserve? You know, like people who preserve fruits and things, literally or metaphysically, maybe you can turn your fruit into jam. Turn things that have happened into sweet memories. Deepen commitments and friendships. Enhance what you already have in some way. So to conclude, feast upon your bounty, sacrifice to allow greater flourishing, celebrate and have gratitude for your harvest. Give thanks to Gaia for showing us how to live a goddess-inspired life. Okay, so now Sam is going to tell us about Ceres and Demeter and the Corn Mother.
Well, first of all, Karen, I just want to honor your wisdom. This was just, it's so amazing to listen to. And there are so many things in my own personal life that I have to prune, and I have to say, you know, I can't have these people in my life anymore. And I really have to let them go, or I really have to let a situation go. And it's so hard.
It is. And it is.
And it's not something that you can just speak it and do it. You really have to invest some energy and some heart and some thought and make a commitment to it. And that's what I'm going to try and do. And I know it's going to be a big challenge for me in this next year, but that's my goal.
Well,
and,
you know, I hear you, and I'm doing the same thing. I mean, I might have, with your help, you know, written in, you know, hopefully an inspirational piece, but by no means are these things real easy.
No, they're not, and it takes work. But hopefully we can inspire our listeners to at least plant the seed to think about it and start doing the work on their own to get rid of that which doesn't serve. Because the planet and your life, they just don't have time for stuff like that.
Absolutely. Well said.
So I'm going to move on to something a little lighter and talk about the message of the season and llamas and grains and more grains. So here we make this transition. And before you is the season of the harvest of grains. There's corn, there's wheat, there's barley, there's triticale, there's rye. Everything nourishing to the body has come into its time. And we have now moved from the return of the light. The wheel of the year is turned once more to the planting of, from the planting of our seeds, to the first sprouts and the greening of the earth, the first blossoms, the first fruits, and now we enter the season of the first of the three great harvests: corn, grains, fruits, grapes, and they're all in their prime. Foods have always played an important part in rituals and in the worship of the gods and goddesses, because without food, we would not live at all. And its production, along with the fertility of the earth, was one of the central themes of ancient religions. Today, we head to a grocery store and buy whatever we want. It's on the shelf. We grab it. It's made. It's done. But back in ancient times, the tending of crops was absolutely necessary, and it was miraculous that a seed or kernel of grain could be planted in the soil, sprout and grow into something that would provide a sustaining meal. It was as though by placing it in the womb of the Earth Mother that she would nourish it and sustain it, magically transforming it, just as a woman would nurture the seed in her womb to produce a child. One of the most valuable foods was the grain, for it was packed with the most nutrition. It could be made into flour and then into life-sustaining bread, the staff of life. So today I'd like to honor and observe some of the harvest days and the goddesses of the grains: Demeter, Ceres, the Corn Man, and I'd like to touch a little bit on the Wicker Man too. August 1st is traditionally known as Llamas, which is from a Celtic word that means loaf mass, or the mass of the loaf, the sacred ceremony of the bread. It's also known as Lunasad, in honor of the god Lu. It is the wake of Lu, the sun king, whose light begins to dwindle after the summer solstice. Traditionally, the first sheaf of wheat was ceremonially reaped, threshed, milled, and baked into a loaf for a sacrifice. The grain dies so that the people might live. Sound familiar? Eating this bread gave people life. Well, if all this sounds vaguely Christian, it is. In the sacrament of communion, bread is blessed, becomes the body of God, and is eaten to nourish the faithful. But this Christian mystery echoes the pagan mystery of the grain god. And it's interesting to note that after the first gathering was baked and offered in sacrifice, the next baking round of loaves and the first pressing of grapes into wine became the original Holy Communion. The bread and wine of the earth eventually became the Christian version of the body and blood of Christ. Llamas is the long-awaited harvest, especially in Great Britain. In Scotland, the youngest child in the family traditionally cuts the last sheaf of wheat and weaves it into a corn dolly. The first family to finish its harvest makes the corn dolly and passes it on to the others as they finish. In Ireland, it was considered very bad luck to begin the harvest before August 1st. It suggested a superstition, which meant that the previous year's harvest had run out early, and which was considered a serious failure in the agricultural communities. So if crops were left in the field too long, or the bread was not baked in time, families could starve. In Britain, July is the season of haymaking, and August is the corn or barley harvest. Lunasad is the time to sacrifice the grain. Way back in 1100, Common Era, on the morrow of Lammas, August 2nd, King William Rufus of England was shot through the eye with an arrow while hunting in the New Forest. The body of this red-haired king was carried through the countryside, and the folk came out to mourn him as John Barleycorn. Now, some people say that this William the Red was the Lammas sacrifice, and that having made a wasteland of his kingdom and his crops and treating the people so cruelly, he was killed by the people, or the gods, as a sacrifice to bring new life to the land and to the crops. It's interesting to note that the term corn, as in corn dolly or John Barleycorn, refers to oftenly a single kernel of grain, because we look at a corn dolly, but it's made out of wheat, so why is it called a corn dolly? Well, corn and kernel of grain were one and the same. And corn, barley, and wheat were often synonymous as corn in the ancient world. The Lammas time was also known as the dog days of summer. Sure, you've all heard of that. For this time of year marks the rising of Sirius the Dog Star and the beginning of the Nile floods and the end of the year in Egypt. The stories and tradition of Lammas and Lunasad are wonderful and complex, full of richness and wisdom, and I invite the listeners to go and check it out for themselves, because I could go on and on, but I won't. So I'd like to move on to Demeter now. Ah, Demeter, the great Greek goddess of agriculture, grain, and bread, the prime sustenance of people. She also presided over the mystery cults and a plethora of other sacred duties, including the Eleusinian mysteries. Demeter brought grains and agriculture to the people, hence civilization. She kept the earth fertile and productive. Her daughter was Persephone, who was young, beautiful, and joyful. But one day, while Demeter was tending the sacred fields, Persephone was playing in a meadow picking wildflowers, when Hades, god of the underworld, saw her and fell in love with her. He had to have her. He arranged for Zeus to help him secretly kidnap her and take her to the underworld as his wife. Demeter returned to the meadow to find her lovely daughter gone. She roamed the earth over and over in search of her. The information that we have from the Homeric hymns and stories about all of this is so long and complicated, and it makes for quite the Olympic soap opera. So let's simplify things. Demeter approached Zeus and Hades and the rest of the gods, requesting the return of her daughter, but with no satisfaction. So, wasting away with depression and yearning for her daughter, Demeter caused a most dreadful and cruel year for mankind. She ceased all growth on the earth, and so the ground would not allow seed or grain to sprout. Barley was cast upon the land without avail. It is from this myth that we get the explanation for winter, when the earth dies and nothing grows. Hello? So Demeter set out to destroy the whole human race. with a cruel famine, hence robbing not only the mortals of sustenance, but she wanted to get back at the gods, all of them who dwelled on Olympus, of their glorious rites of gifts and sacrifices from the mortals. Because without sacrifice, the gods aren't honored. And if the gods aren't honored, their egos get bruised and they get upset. So the gods protested and appealed to Zeus. Zeus called in a lot of deities to help, but Demeter's heart was not moved by their efforts, for she vowed that she would never set foot on fragrant Olympus again, nor let fruit or grain spring out of the ground again, until she beheld with her own eyes her fair-haired, beautiful daughter. Eventually, Zeus appealed again and again, and finally had a chat with Hades. But because her daughter Persephone had partaken of a meal of pomegranate seeds, an interesting mystery, perhaps of being deflowered, she could not return completely to her mother. Could this be a patriarchal rule, perhaps, of the ancient world? At any rate, the agreement was that Persephone could return to her mother for only part of the year, and the rest of the time she was obligated to stay in the underworld with Hades. Of course, Demeter is so happy to have her daughter back that she blesses the earth once again with growing grain and magic. The return of spring and the growing season is upon the earth once more, but she vows that the life force of the earth will stop when her daughter returns to Hades each year. An ancient explanation for why we have seasons. So let's talk about Ceres. As we move from Greece to Rome, we encounter Ceres, the Greek equivalent of Demeter. She has the same myth and legend and the same daughter legend going on down under. But there are far less records in ancient writings of her and her mysteries. But then one has to allow Rome to copy Greece, I suppose. Actually, we encounter Ceres every day, as it is from her that we get our term for that popular breakfast item known as cereal. Ceres, as the Roman version of Demeter and goddess of agriculture and grain, was considered a most kind and benevolent goddess. The Romans had a common expression, fit for Ceres, which meant splendid, cool, do it, you're on it. Ceres was beloved for her service to mankind in giving them the gift of the harvest, the reward for the cultivation of the soil. Ceres was the goddess of the harvest, but was also credited with teaching the humans how to grow the grain, gather it, preserve it, prepare it, and cook it, hence teaching them to become more civilized. She was also thought to be responsible for the fertility of the earth, as was Demeter. But, as records show us, Ceres was the only one of the deities who is actually involved on a day-to-day basis in the lives of the common folk. While other deities, including Demeter, occasionally dabbled in human affairs when it suited their personal interests or came to the aid of special mortals they favored, the goddess Ceres was considered truly the nurturer of mankind. Ceres was worshipped at her temple on the Aventine Hill, one of the great seven hills of ancient Rome. Her ancient festival was called the Cerealia and was celebrated in April. Ceres, like Demeter, is often portrayed holding a scepter or farming tool in one hand and a basket of flowers, fruits, and grain in the other. Imagine cornucopia. She may also be wearing a garland in her hair made from ears of corn or sheaves of wheat. The Romans explained the turning of the seasons with the same story as Demeter. However, Rome still has a festival that honors Ceres to this day. It is held at the end of January and is called the Paganalia, It's the Roman festival of sowing and the honoring of Ceres. Last but not least, let's come home to the Native American lands and talk about the Corn Mother. She exists in so many Native American traditions. Among the Cherokee, she is known as Tselu. It is believed that she emerged from the shafts of the first sacred ear of corn. She says this to the people, "I will return every year in each ear of corn. I will dance in the summer fields to please the soil. I will dance for the sun and the earth. I will dance for all my children. I dance for the rainbow, and I dance for you." In this tradition, it is believed that corn is one of the plants that grows not in the sunlight, but at night. Some people claim that they can hear the swish of the plants as they grow in the hot darkness of summer. Tselu taught her people how to dry the corn and preserve the seed of the kernel, thus keeping alive her essence. Then she taught them how, when, and where to plant, and the songs and prayers for rain. The Hopis have a similar legend. Reciprocity and reverence are necessary for a good relationship with Earth Mother. Without honor, her gifts are soon lost. But Tselu does not punish. She offers her children a chance to return to natural order. There is a Cherokee poet by the name of Marilu Awiakta who wrote, "When I held up an ear of calico corn, I would think about the wisdom of Corn Mother. How the different kernels are arranged around the cob, no one more important than the other. How each kernel respects the space of those on either side, yet remains itself, either red, black, white, yellow, or blue, or combinations of all. This is how the Corn Mother, in her physical being, exemplifies unity in diversity." So now I'd like to talk about the Wicker Man. Has a special place in my heart. Did the Celts really celebrate a holiday by building a huge hollow man out of reeds, wood, and wicker and filling the man with human sacrifices and then lighting the thing on fire? I think not. Or instead, were the Celts victims of really bad Roman press? The Wicker Man ritual was originally discussed by Julius Caesar in Book 6 of the Gallic War, in which he describes the customs of the Celts of Gaul, and he writes, "The whole Gallic race is addicted to religious ritual, one being that of human sacrifices in the Wicker Man. They weave huge figures of wicker and fill the limbs with humans who are then burned to death when the figures are set afire." Well, the true Celtic tradition is about llamas, and the first loaves were often placed in the Wicker Man for sacrifice. But during the Roman occupation, there were so many fatalities from war and disease. The bodies may have been burned everywhere for efficiency. The Romans, assuming that the gods preferred this execution, may have mistakenly associated the coincidence of the human burning or sacrifice with a sacred agricultural ritual. How many times has that mistake been made around the world? I say bunk to Caesar, as he never even attended a ritual, and yes, bad press for the Celts. However, the gruesome story lingers on and inspired two Hollywood films, one made in 1973, and the most recent starring Nicolas Cage. Both are based on the disturbing retellings of the Wicker Man legend investigating a disappearance and the pagan carryings on that culminate in human sacrifice. Well, I guess you have to let Hollywood do its Hollywooding. Then there is the annual Burning Man Festival, a bizarre combination of an event held the week before Labor Day in northern Nevada. Okay, so it's Woodstock in the desert for old hippies and art fanatics. This year there will be over 50,000 people there. I'm guilty. My husband goes. He's attending next month. Now, officially, you can't find any direct line on any of the Burning Man websites that draws the connection between the Kelter Wicker Man and the Burning Man, but everybody who goes there knows it. They all know it's a Wicker Man sacrifice. However, it's a festival that they will admit to, but those of us who know, is this sacrifice about people? No. This sacrifice is giving up what no longer serves. That is what is burning away in the Burning Man statue. There's actually a temple where you can go, and inside the Burning Man, you can write your intentions of what you want to prune away and sacrifice and give up in your life. So when they light that fire, your prayer is sent up to the heavens, which is the ultimate intent. The festival began when one of the founders torched an effigy on a San Francisco beach in 1986 to purge himself of negative vibes after he broke up with his girlfriend. He was sacrificing and pruning away an unhealthy relationship. Something very purging and cleansing about the fire. My experience with the Wicker Man was indeed Celtic and celebrated with my desert tribe in Vegas. The pre-ritual starts 2 days before the burn. All the men gather to build the 10-foot-tall Wicker Man, while all the women gather sacred and aromatic herbs and colorful ribbons. The next day, both men and women say their prayers of what they want to sacrifice and let go, and either assign those prayers and intentions to the herbs or tie them on in the colorful ribbons. And the Wicker Man is woven with this beautiful array of colorful ribbons. Then he is loaded up onto a van and driven out to the Goddess Temple in Indian Springs. The next night, the circle is cast, the torches are lit, and the ritual begins. I have to say, it was truly magical. We have to remember, when a sacrifice is made in the space of ritual, spoken out loud and witnessed, or given sacred prayer, the intent of the letting go becomes very powerful. Every culture, every era, has a sacred respect for the grain, whether it is the ancient Sumerians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Celts, or the Native Americans. The legends and stories are the same all over. We have forgotten the sacredness of the harvest. We have forgotten that it is important to make sacrifices and bring the sacred back into our life. We have forgotten to be thankful for the bounty of the earth. We have forgotten who we are. But today we can prune away that which is dead and done and no longer serves us. As we move into the season of the first harvest, we can be grateful for the first fruits of our own accomplishments. And we can honor our cereal in the morning and give thanks for our daily bread. Blessed be.
Thank you, Sam, for bringing that all full circle. Okay, so listeners, as we have about 25 minutes left for the show, we're going to have time to do our meditation and then wrap things up. So please get comfortable and prepare yourself as you would, as you normally do for meditation. Close your eyes and take some deep breaths. In and out, in and out. You are sitting cross-legged in a green meadow. You are breathing in the smell of freshly cut grass and breathing out stress and worry. You're breathing in sunshine and cool breezes and breathing out uncertainty and angst. Continue to breathe good things in, things that no longer serve you out. As you breathe, you send your red cord down through your torso and it begins to penetrate the earth. Breathing it down, down, it roots you to Gaia, our mother. As you breathe in her energy. She fills and renews you. As you breathe out, your cord becomes more deeply embedded in the body of our great Earth Mother. In and out, in and out. You go stronger with your connection. Now, keeping your eyes closed, you focus on the movie screen of your third eye. You see yourself seated in this green meadow, but you're surrounded by a circle of trees. The trees are of many varieties. They have different types and colors of bark for their trunk. Their leaves are different sizes, colors, and shapes. You hear the leaves rustle in the cool breeze. You continue to breathe and watch the trees, when suddenly before your eyes the trees begin to morph into the shapes of women of different traditions. They are different sizes and shapes, and they're dressed differently too. You see the circle of tree women glow, a golden glow that pulses with each breath you take. You feel they are connected to you. You and they are one body, one breath. Then suddenly, you notice you are no longer seated cross-legged on the green meadow. Your red cord has morphed into tree roots, and you too have become a tree. You're standing there encircled by these tree women, and now you too are a tree. But you relax into your newfound reality because you know you are perfectly safe, and you begin to intuit these tree women are speaking to you. You listen closely and focus so you hear what they're telling you. You begin to understand they are goddesses of the harvest, of the corn, of the green growing things. Now you recognize them. Demeter, the Corn Mother, Ceres, Pomona, even the rice goddesses of Asia. They're all here with many different faces, and they may be called many different names, but they're all one. They are the bountiful, fruitful earth, and you are a part of her. The din of their voices subsides until you hear but one voice. She tells you to go within, to focus on the branches of your tree. You must take stock now, she's telling you. You must become aware of what branches need pruning. What must you cut away so that the rest may flourish? You heed her words and begin to focus on your many arms, which are branches filled with leaves. But then you notice some of the branches are dry and brittle. They're withered and no longer serve you. What do these branches represent in your life? Bad habits, toxic people, fear, uncertainty, mean-spiritedness, a tendency to gossip, jealousy. Maybe it's eating too much sugar, being uncaring, callous. Do these branches represent a lack of gratitude? What is it that prevents your tree from growing to new heights, from becoming fuller, stronger, more rooted? Now, allow these branches to fall to the earth. Sever them from your healthy branches. Return them to Gaia so they might become compost and help nourish the soil. Allow that which no longer serves you to depart and bid them farewell. Sacrifice it to the earth. You understand you are stronger now. You have freed yourself to flourish. You stand a bit taller, having pruned the withered branches, which offer no nourishment. You take a few moments to revel in your new stature, to feel the breeze blowing through your beautiful branches. You hear the rustling of your leaves. What a grand tree you are. And you hear the goddess tell you she was once worshipped as a tree. And you see her smile at you. You look up into the sun on the movie screen of your third eye, and its glow casts a bright light over you and the ring of goddesses surrounding you. As the glow slowly fades, so does their circle. You realize you are standing alone once again in the green meadow. You are no longer a tree. You are you, but a stronger, healthier you, more able to go forth and bear fruit from your metaphorical branches. You know you can come back to this meadow. You can prune your divine tree anytime you must cut away that which no longer serves you. Now slowly, slowly, come back to your sacred space. Open your eyes when it feels comfortable. Shake your hands. Make circles with your ankles. Take a final deep breath. And bask in the glow of your communion with the goddesses of the harvest. So, listeners, I think you maybe have figured this out by now, but if you want to punctuate what we've been discussing in today's ritual, get out your pot or your golden cauldron or your glass bowl. You can write on paper what it is you'd like to prune from your divine tree. Write on the paper that which you feel no longer serves your life. Then carefully burn the paper in the cauldron or the bowl, some fire-safe dish, and be done with it. Or, as I said earlier, crumple it up and actually flush it down the toilet. Just let it go. Thank you for listening. So one quick announcement before we get into the affirmations. If you're local to the L.A. area in Southern California, it's important for you to know that Pagan Pride has moved not only to a new location, but their date has changed. So mark your calendars, please. Pagan Pride is going to be at the Rainbow Lagoon in Long Beach, but the date is October 21st. Okay, thank you very much for listening. Now, Sam has some affirmations for you before we wrap up tonight's ritual.
Would you like me to read all 10 of those symptoms of spiritual awakening?
Sure. Why don't you go ahead? We have about 15 minutes left, so you should have time.
Okay. We found this, too. We thought we'd share it with you all because, well, it works for us. These are the 12 symptoms of spiritual awakening. Number one. An increased tendency to let things happen rather than make things happen. Frequent attacks of smiling. Feelings of being connected with others and nature. Frequent overwhelming episodes of appreciation. A tendency to think and act spontaneously rather than from fears based on past experience. An unmistakable ability to enjoy each moment. A loss of the ability to worry. A loss of the interest in conflict and confrontation. A loss of interest in interpreting the actions of others. A loss of the interest in judging others. A loss of interest in judging yourself. And gaining the ability to love without an agenda or expecting anything. If you have any of those symptoms, you're waking up.
And it's calling for you to do some pruning, too.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
loss. Get rid of this.
So pruning is a thing we should be doing all the time, really.
Right. Here's another one we found. This is written by an elderly woman. I myself have never been able to find out precisely what feminism is. I only know that people call me a feminist whenever I express sentiments that differentiate me from a doormat or a prostitute.
I love that one.
And the last one, and readers, cover your ears. There's a little body language in here. The quote of the day: whatever you give a woman, she will make greater. Give a woman grain, she will make bread. If you give her sperm, she'll give you a baby. If you give her a house, she'll give you a home. If you give her groceries, she'll give you a meal. If you give her a smile, she'll give you her heart. She multiplies and enlarges what is given to her. So, if you give her any crap, be ready to receive a ton of shit. I qualified it before I said it.
And this is why women have been granted the gift of multitasking.
There you go.
Okay, so as we close out tonight's Sacred Salon, we close it with the other side of the bookend, the prayer of remembering. So if you remember this, listeners, the response is, we rejoice in all life. We remember who we are. We live in all things. All things live in us. We rejoice in all life. We remember who we are. We live by the sun, we move by the stars. We rejoice in all life, we remember who we are. We eat from the earth, we drink from the rain, we breathe from the air. We rejoice in all life, we remember who we are. We share with the creatures, we have strength through their gifts. We rejoice in all life, we remember who we are. We depend on the forests. We have knowledge through their secrets. We rejoice in all life. We remember who we are. We have the privilege of seeing and understanding. We have the responsibility of caring. We have the joy of celebrating. We rejoice in all life. We remember who we are. Well, you know, tonight we've talked a lot about pruning so that you might renew yourself and flourish. So, in closing, I just say, as you go forward into the coming weeks, make sure you eat your daily prunes so you don't hang on to the shit that you really don't need. So, we hope you enjoy that. I thought you could get a kick out of it. So, Sam, I want to thank you for helping me again with our Sacred Salon.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Well, come back and help me in October, and we'll be doing our next one.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
Thank
you,
Karen.
So, listeners, I want to thank you for being with us tonight. And next week, our show is going to be on the 8th of August. And let me just tell you who the guests are. I'm going to have Anne Key on the show. She's going to be talking about Aztec goddesses and the ritual calendar. We're going to talk about some of some of those goddesses like Mother of the Earth, the Jaws of Life and Death, mortal women deified in childbirth, the Goddess of Filth. Yes, some very interesting goddesses, no doubt. And then Cass Dalglish. She's going to be on the show. She's a professor of English. And the show topic is, it's called Humming the Blues. Women have been writing their stories for more than 4,000 years. We're going to talk about Enheduanna and Inanna. And we're going to get into, the meaning of those early goddesses and that first priestess. So I hope you'll be with us next week, and we have lots of other good things planned for the rest of the month as well. So you'll be hearing more about that. Please remember to click the follow button so that you don't have to rely on my email reminders. You'll automatically get a reminder of the show and the guest in your email box. And don't forget, please, that the Blog Talk listeners, I mean Blog Talk hosts like myself, we do pay to keep the show on the air. And as Goddess teaches us, what you nourish thrives, what you neglect withers. So if you can make any donations to help me keep Voices of the Sacred Feminine on the air, no matter how small, it is appreciated. There are PayPal buttons on my Goddess store page at KarenTate.com. You can go there and make any donation you like. And while you're there, please make sure you take advantage of the free meditations. I've heard they're pretty good, so I hope you enjoy them. So thank you, listeners, for being with Sam and I tonight. I am going to close out the show. Let's see, what music shall I play for you? Something new by a group called Damkar, D-A-M-K-A-R, and the song is called Son of the Widow. So I hope you enjoy it, and I'll be back with you next week. Good night.